Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
The share it with a friend deal. Even if that friend is yourself. Your McDonald's, your rules.
Live your best morning with BOGO breakfast sandwiches only on the McDonald's app. Now buy one bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles or sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles and get a second one free. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid one per day. Excludes $1, $2, $3 menu. Visit McDonald's app for details. Download and registration required.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Never prayed, but tonight I'm on my knees. I need to hear some sounds that recognise the pain in me. I let the melody rise, let it cleanse my mind. I feel free now, but the airways are clean and there's no one singing to me now. Ladies and gentlemen, we're now floating in Scream of Celica. My name's Kevin Graham, and as usual on a Tuesday evening, I'm now joined by the rock and roll star himself, Russell Boyce. What's happening?
I was just showing off the glasses. I got them for $3.99. I'm not going to actually sit and do the show wearing them, right? That would be a wee bit silly, but for £3.99, you don't get a pint for £3.99 now, Kev. You know? I better showcase these wee babies, you know what I mean?
Well,
but no, of course. Scream of Celica comes first. Professional as always, mate.
I didn't drink anymore, so I didn't ken the name. I didn't ken how much a pint is. So I haven't been in a pub for, well, I have been in pubs, eh? But as I say, I was at a meeting the other week there, and I got around them, and it was a Guinness, a lager, and a can of cola, and it was £9, and you were like, you could have picked me up off the flare.
Totally
£9, man. £9. That's unbelievable, man.
For a bit of context, I was in Stirling picking up my dog on Thursday evening. And it's a long couple of buses, right? I was busting for the toilet, right? So I went to Molly Malone's. You'll be familiar with that.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, look, I'll buy for a juice. Like, I'll pay for a juice, but I'm like literally just coming to use your facilities, really. £2.40, mate, for a can of Iron Brew.
Ooh, tough, eh? Tough gig.
Most expensive beer I've ever done, mate.
I know, definitely. That should be a question to the viewers. What's the most expensive pee that you've ever done?
That's a good question, that.
That's a good question. Russell, you're going to need to talk us through that shirt.
So, some of you might be familiar with the fact that I have, sadly, I mean, it got pathetic, Kev, really, let's be honest. Me and you started doing the Monday Club a long time ago. And wearing a different Adidas original became a thing. In my brain, probably no one else's, let's be honest, no one else cares. But in my brain, I'm like, can't I let them down? Got to wear a different one every time. And for some reason, I then did the exact same thing again with Screamer Selica, and he wear a different shirt every show. So I put all this pressure on myself. And then I remember today, I have the mix of both, an Adidas original actual shirt. I couldn't think of a better person to be sharing my joy of having wearing this shirt, Kev, than yourself. You know what I mean?
Thank you very much. That's a cracker of a shirt. I've never seen an Adidas dress shirt before. And I'm really just quite puzzled that you had forgot how you were, like, you forgot that you had it.
Mate, I remember wearing it to a guy called Stephen Jeffrey's wedding. He's a good guy, him. And he was like, what is that shirt you're wearing underneath? You're like, I wore a kilt. But he went, is that the Adidas? And I was like, I know, it's pretty petty. And that's why I bought it. And I completely forgot I owned it. I think I've worn this 5 times in the 10 years I've owned it. You know what I mean?
Well, there you go. It's getting its 6 out in this evening. Now, we're in the middle of a festival of football.
Yes.
And we're going to go back to a festival of football, which was 21 years ago. And my T-shirt relates to the man that we're going to be speaking about.
The man of the match
that we're going to be speaking about. Now, this T-shirt is from, as a company I mentioned last week, CS Terrace Tees. If you search for them on Twitter under CS Terrace Tees, you'll find them, or it's csterracetees.bigcartel.com. Go and give the comrade a bit of a check out. It's fantastic gear. He's got a whole loads of stuff there, a whole load of Celtic gear and that. So going to help a brother out, eh? And I'm humbled that he sent me this tonight, and especially for what we've got. Especially what we're going to be talking about tonight as well, eh? So, Euros 2000, and we're going back to, it was Belgium and Holland in the year 2000,
yes.
But we're going to Holland, we're going to Eindhoven on the 19th of June, That's when Sweden were playing Italy in the Philips Arena. Was it the Philips Arena or the Philips Stadion, I'm going to call it.
Very good.
I like that.
Stadion sounds better.
In Eindhoven. And it was the final game of Group B. And in Group B, now, can you remember who Sweden bet in their group to qualify for this tournament?
England,
that is correct. They,
and I think Johan Mjelby may have scored the goal.
He did that, yes.
Yes.
But England also made this tournament. Who did they beat in the playoff?
Scotland. Despite Don Hutchison scoring a header at Wembley.
So there you go.
This
modern day fiesta of football, we've got a link to what's going to happen on Friday.
Yes. And I felt the game we've done today is completely different for us to have done. Like, we've always done a Celtic link. Even last week, the Ireland link was very much Celtic player related. I suppose there is a slight link, but
there's plenty of Celtic links in this.
There is, though. It turns out there is, which, again, like you always say, go down the rabbit hole. Once you pick a game, go down the rabbit hole, and you're right. You start thinking of Freddie Lundberg and stuff, but Celtic everywhere here.
Yes, there is Celtic everywhere.
But I just thought it'd be quite refreshing to pick two nations not associated with Celtic or Scotland or Ireland, like, but yet we'll twist it in, we'll manipulate it to being still amazingly Celtic related.
Of course we will.
It's a fascinating game.
It was a fascinating game. Now, it was the last game, as I say, it was the last game in Group B.
Yep.
Sweden basically needed to win to have any chance of qualification for the knockout stages. They had They'd already played Belgium and Turkey. They had got beaten 2-1 from Belgium. Big Johan Mjalby scored the Swedes goal that day against Belgium as well. And they had a 0-0 draw with Turkey. The Italians were going into this game already qualified. And they had beat Turkey 2-1 and beat Belgium 2-0.
Yep.
So this was a tough ask for the Swedes to go in.
And they made 8 changes. Mm. That's the maddest thing. The Italy team has 8 changes in it. And yet it looks like to me the sort of squad, when you read the names off, you go, that would be a tournament could win right now.
Definitely. I didn't realise they had made 8 changes, but when I looked in the team, there were some names I was surprised at, but then it's 20 years ago. I was like, well, maybe I wasn't.
Oh, of course.
My mind's not as sharp as it used to be. And but this was an Italian team that played like an Italian team, if you know what I mean. You see that Italian team on Friday night, which played nothing like an Italian team. Like, you're going, what's this? I mean, I'm the guy who...
You're so right. You're so right.
So I'm the guy who's backed Italy in every major tournament since I've been old enough to bet. Because they're always there or thereabouts. It doesn't matter how terrible they are, they always get to the knockout stages. There's a couple of tournaments where that hasn't happened right enough, eh? And I'm watching that on Friday night, and I'm going, they've started too well here. I want them to lump into a tournament.
Kev, we were talking about clothes earlier. When Roberto Mancini is on the touchline looking like that, they've got every chance, no matter what style of football they play. That grey jacket, the suit, oh, come on. He looked a dream, didn't he? He must be about 55 years old. Rocking.
He might be older than that, actually. Mancini could be older than that, could be older than 55.
I'm going to say 56, max. I'm sure he was born. And we have the numbers, remember I told you.
I know, and I ken that you're big on Italian football. What did you think of the Scotland get up yesterday? The suits that they had on?
I don't know. I thought we all were guilty of setting ourselves up for a fall yesterday, mate, the suits included. It was just one of those ones where I was hook, line and sinker as well, by the way, so don't think I'm being smug about it. I'm really not. I just think we were all convinced that yesterday we would take care of the Czechs, and wow. Reality is horrible, isn't it?
It's typical Scotland hubris, isn't it? Liam Dominic Callow comes in for Facebook. Mancini is 56 year old. So there you go.
65 he was born, I'm telling you.
That's
weird as anything, mate. I'm weird.
That's some Rain Man going on there, eh?
As
definitely. So what we'll do is we'll have a quick run through the Italian team then. In goals was Toldo, then Ferreira, Paolo Negro. I can't read my writing. That's my problem. and that's with the bin zone, eh? Mark Uliano, Gianluca Piesto, Paolo Mandini, Luigi Di Baggio, Massimo Ambrosini, the one and only Del Piero, and Vincenzo Montella. And as you say,
eight
changes in that team, and that team is still
frightening.
It's still like, I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 Juve players, the goalkeepers for Fiorentina, Lazio, Milan.
Went to Milan that summer, I'm sure.
Liam Dominic Colo, there you go. Colo, I think I've says your surname right. You can be, I'm terrible with names. Good with faces, terrible with names. But that's a fan. I love Montella as a player. I mean, Del Piero's just Del Good. Piero, eh? But I like Montella.
If my memory's right, the 8 changes, funnily enough, Del Piero was not a starter for Italy at that time.
Which is frightening as well, eh?
Mental.
Like, that is absolutely frightening as well.
And we'll get to it, but the goalie scores in this game.
Oh, let it.
Effortless. So good.
The Swedish team, no. This was the point where Scotland didn't qualify for tournaments. And we did actually just naturally migrate to supporting Sweden. Because there was a
million %
because there was like the Scandinavian, they had Johan Mjellby, they had Henrik Larsson. And so we says, oh, Sweden's your team when we go to these tournaments. And even last night, what I was really surprised about when I saw this team, that Mikael Lustig wasn't playing right back. he must have been suspended for the tournament or something, eh? Because
he must have been. Seb Larsson not playing midfield confused me a wee bit as well.
it's unbelievable that Lustig was
still there.
I know. Lustig again last night, and that was sore last night. That's the first time I've watched a game coming through that stadium since 2003. Because that was a Seville stadium, and even when the camera panned, I could actually pick myself where I actually was in that stadium, and that's the first game I've watched since 2003.
I never really joined those dots, if I'm honest with you.
I feel a wee bit
like I've let Celtic down not joining those dots last night. I never even clicked.
You could pick. The football gods yesterday, I felt, were picking on me. Mikael Lustig in that stadium in Seville. They were picking on me. They were having a wee chuckle at themselves. The Swedish side. So there's plenty of Celtic interest in this. Plenty of Celtic
mad,
interest in that. In goals is Marcus Hedman.
Magnus.
Then you've got Olaf Melbourne.
No, Marcus Hedman.
Is that what I say, sir? What's his name? Marcus Hedman.
Same hang. Actually.
Olaf Melberg, who we were linked with as well quite a few times.
Yes.
Patrick Anderson, Joachim Borkland, but he had already played for Rangers
player, yep.
Thomas Gustafsson, Johan Mjellby, Magnus Svensson, Hakan Mild. Freddie Lundberg, Osman Ofske, and Henrik up front. So, again, how many Celtic players are in that? You've won 4 Celtic players, eventually.
Mad. And there's still connotations with other ones as well. You know, it's...
I know.
The rivals, for example. You know, it's funny that... I think there's a huge affinity with Celtic in Sweden for some reason. I don't know if it's maybe just all based on Henrik and then we just feed off any other link because they're that desperate to keep the Henrik link going forever because he is truly, to me, the icon of all icons that I've ever known in my Celtic sport life. And I know Tony, for example, talks about Kenny Dalglish. I genuinely believe Henrik Larsson is my... Like, what Dalglish is to Tony... I think Henrik Larsson is that's the loyalty guy. You know,
Larsson's that to me as well. And it's when you do talk to an older generation now, and even guys like my dad's age and that who saw the Lions and the great when Celtic were a European giant, and even they say, "Oh, Larsson was one of the best." But and they've got no qualms of saying that whatsoever. No argument. There's no aye, but that was a. That was in a different era. They couldn't lace this one's boots, that one's boots. There's no argument from that generation. They go, Larson's up there with him. Well, so.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I think that's why, I mean, Larsson, this was Larsson coming back from his leg break, and they had to play 20 minutes for Celtic before he went to the squad in the Euros. And he played all three games for Sweden in the Euros after coming on as a 61st minute sub for Ilie Berkovic against Dundee United with a moustache before producer Paul comes in, because that's been a... He did have one of those pencil moustache.
He did.
That you see off like 16-year-olds and up the strip in Tenerife when they're trying to get in the pubs. A cat looks at them the wrong way and they get a shave.
So I can relate.
So it's a strong Sweden side. It's also like... Also, I think that we like the Swedes as well because there's a British element to them. There's always a load of Swedes played in Britain, so you know them. And the fact is, the best player of your generation is playing for Sweden always means that you want them to go well. And then on that, by this point, you've got Big Johan as well, who's also became a sort of cult player by this point, like... for Celtic, a good player for Celtic at this point. And he's playing, the Albion, this game's playing at the base of a diamond in a 4-4-2.
I know. And it's funny because was it maybe O'Neill who actually kind of influenced that shift to centre-back from Albion?
He did, yes.
Albion is someone to me who fits Martin O'Neill's prototype centre-half or left-back or right-back. In fact, anyone who plays in a back four or five who is 6'4" and built like a you-know-what house. That is what Martin O'Neill looked for. I mean, he did it at Villa. I remember he had this guy, Wilfred Bauma, at left-back, who was just an absolute machine. And you thought, that's a centre-half you've got playing at left-back, isn't it, really? For being honest. It's just what he does. He moulds players like that. I actually think it benefited me, Albie, playing centre-back. I thought me, Albie, came to the fore at Celtic as a centre-half. I remember him much more as a centre-back than I do as a DM.
Mm-hmm. I know, and it was O'Neill. I mean, he was signed as a defensive midfielder for Celtic. His first game, the 5-1 game against Rangers, he played as a defensive midfielder. And it wasn't until Martin O'Neill's season put him in the middle of a three because they saw that he's, I think, what is it, no-nonsense style. If you want to use the cliche of football cliches, the no-nonsense style, he was robust.
Absolutely.
And he was a Martin O'Neill type player. And
he knew
he was an intelligent player as well. He wasn't the quickest, but he used his football intelligence really, really well. And it's something that we probably need to talk about because, like, Henrik Larsson gets all the glory, but Johan Mjällby was at Celtic for 6 years as well. He was at Celtic for 6 years, 3 league titles, 2 Scottish Cups, 2 league cups. Then he comes back as assistant manager with Lennon and, like,
and
three league titles in a row with Lenny.
And see, when he came back as assistant manager, maybe just me or you, he was better looking when he came back as assistant manager, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, like
he's aged extremely well. Mm-hmm. Like, Tomo had a wee bit of grey wisps in his hair, and you knew Alan Thompson was our former player. Mjällby looked ready to put the strip on again, you know what I mean? He looked awesome. I always remember that tunnel stuff. Remember the tunnel stuff with obviously McCoist and all that? It was Mjällby that stuck out for me there. He was ready.
I liked that about him. I mean, there are stories where Mjällby was like a sort of enforcer in the dressing room as well with that side and an enforcer with the coaching staff as well. And for some of the stories that have been told, he liked leaving a reducer and on training on certain players as well. Mm-hmm. If they were getting a bit too big for these boots, because as you say, he still looked fit enough, and him and the coaching staff did actually take part in some of the training sessions. And if he wanted to settle a few scores, he did.
I think he also kept Neil Lennon on a tight leash.
He did. But you argue,
I get the vibe that for all Lennon's faults and for all we've criticised Neil Lennon for his second spell at the club, I'll always go back to the fact he didn't have any of his own team. Two arguments to that. Firstly, you accepted that decision, mate. You start tying the noose around your own neck. But the flip side is, forget about that and go, what would have happened if he did have Johan Mjällby back beside him the second time? Does it change anything? Maybe not that much, but I certainly think you'd have benefited from it. So certainly you and Melby would have went, you are not going out and doing that Dubai speech. Just any bother. Like, I think Melby had him on quite a tight rein. Melby was someone who strikes me as very professional and had that level, probably above Neil Lennon's, in fairness, no offence, but I think Neil Lennon maybe is guilty of old school. And I think you and Melby is very much with someone like, no. I mean, you know, come on. We need to wait to lift it a bit. But an absolute Swedish icon, mate. You're absolutely spot on. Six years he gave us.
I know, six years, and 4 years in the coaching staff as well. I mean, Celtic have played a major part in his life, and he's played a major part in Celtic's.
In this
modern Celtic in the last 20 years. I mean, this game, it's a 30,000 sellout, and Big Johan has the first chance as a corner comes in and a towering header at the back.
Typical header.
And it's Di Baggio clears it off the line because it's Beck Aldo hands down, eh? And he's got that, like, I love that Sweden kit. That Sweden kit's a classic Sweden kit. And Bigby Albi just looks good in it. He just looks. It's utterly.
He's gloriously handsome, Big Johan.
What's that?
He's gloriously handsome. You know,
he is.
In a team of like sort of robust, sort of not dirty players, but you know, they didn't need to play ugly. I mean, Albi was like doing the exact same as the rest, but just doing it looking awesome. I like that.
Like, what's that American apparel model? It looks like a surf dude. He looked like an extra for Baywatch.
He reminds me of Drago.
That's how we got the nickname Dolph, eh? Football players being very original with nicknames once again.
Of course.
Adam Crockett comes in and he says, what would you guys give for a Johan player now, captain, eh? Oh, we would love a Johan player. Johan's a player that...
Johan Mjelby was someone that maybe came in as captain occasionally. Like, was maybe like your vice captain sort of thing. Like, he was a leader, wasn't he? He was doing the job anyway at the back, you know.
Definitely.
We just don't have that, Kev, at all right now.
The team look good. If I was Christopher Ayer, I'd be watching the YouTube videos of Johan Mjelby and go,
that's really admirable.
That's how you use your physique. That's how you use your presence. That's how you use God's gift.
Just talk about Johan Mjelby. Johan Mjelby then went on, I think people forget this, World Cup 2002. I could be wrong. I think I'm right. He made the team of the tournament.
He did that alongside
Jules Brennan. And then for me at that point, was Johan Mjelby ever crying about booing and huffing and puffing about leaving Celtic? No. And yet you get guys who have 60 minutes of good football in their whole career. They cannot wait to get to that exit and think that, you know, playing for Southampton's a bigger deal. It's not.
But we're having a look at this tournament and...
Yes, sorry.
We're having a look, but no, this is what happens with us. This is just a bad discussion, eh? This is what happens. The Swedish look good, but then again, you've got the Italians who are just sitting back and being Italy. Gone, we didn't really need to do anything here. You need to come at us. You need a result there on us. And we'll just pick you off on the break. We've got Del Piero and Montella that can run. We didn't need to go chasing this game. And that's when the Italians are at their best.
They thrive on that.
Especially in tournament football. Eh? But then the Italians could have been 1-0 done because Lundberg misses an absolute sitter. I still can't believe how he actually put that by the post.
It's almost harder to do that, Kev. Like, since I watched it back, the first chance, the keeper kind of bundles it back to him. But that second snatch, I'm like, that's almost impossible to send that. It's not like he just sent it a wee bit wide. It was miles away. I don't actually know how he's angled his foot to make the ball go in that direction. It was harder to do that, Kev, than score.
It was some bit of skill to put it by the post. It was a great bit of skill to put it by the post. Like, so after that sitter, you're sitting watching the highlights again. And I remember watching the game at the time once. Obviously, the highlights jog things in your head. And at that point, you started thinking, the Italians are just going to nick one here. And lo and behold, they actually did. So in the 39th minute, a Del Piero corner, and Di Biagio headers it in at the near post. Now, Marcus Hedman doesn't really cover himself in glory here. Where
either
he
does. Either does someone else.
Well, we can come to that, eh? Marcus Hedman doesn't really cover himself in glory. He comes off his line when he's got no really chance to come off his line. I think he can actually see Di Biagio getting the ball, and he's gone, oh, I'm going to try and do something here. And he just sort of, he flaps like a guy falling for a high-rise building, really, at it, eh? But, as you say, the Swedes are playing zonal marking. And whose zone is Di Biagio scoring?
Do we need to? No, I hate saying it, though. Yeah, it was Henrik's zone. It was Henrik Larsson.
But I'm going to stick up for Henrik Larsson. Who was picking up the runner? Di Biagio was standing there, like, all alone. He made
he
that
was in
run,
his zone
once
he scored the goal, not when he started.
Aye. But Larsson's marking, he's doing what he has to do at that near post. So whoever's let him run into that zone is at fault. Because I reckon Larsson didn't even know he was there. Because Larsson jumps to try and clear the ball, and the ball goes across his head. So he's not going to know that Di Biagio's came in behind him, eh? So
absolutely spot on, Kev. I'm really glad you said that. I feel a hell of a lot better now.
I know. You can't blame him.
It does make you feel better.
It does, eh? I mean, I was annoyed in the highlights reel that it was that the commentator actually says, oh, that was Henrik Larsson's man. And I'm going, yep. No, wasn't it? No. You didn't know nothing about zonal marking. I listened to Gordon Stratton talking about zonal marking. That wasn't Henrik Larsson's man. No, you're all wrong there. The commentator was clutching at straws, blaming Larsson for that. And Big Hedman kind of chucks a wee straw up after it when the boy ends up in the back of the net as well, eh?
Let's be honest, see, we're going to talk about Swedish and Celtic connections. You have to talk about Marcus or Magnus, whatever you prefer, Hedman. He was rank rotten, Kev. I mean, he came with a bit of a reputation when he joined us, 50-odd caps. Absolute murder. Murder. I'll never forget the Bayern Munich game. That one where he just watches it go in the far corner, he lacked the eye of the tiger, mate. He just didn't have, I don't know, he didn't have control. And you need a keeper, like, see Boric, who came in then shortly after, and even David Marshall to an extent as a 19-year-old, I felt were streets and streets ahead of Magnus Hedman, a guy with 50-odd caps for Sweden, joined from Coventry, £2 million, I think it was. And had a bit of a reputation, mate, as a good... This guy's a player. Oh, Matt Douglas overtook him again, remember? In fact, did we loan him out?
Well, I can't remember.
I think we loaned him out. Honestly, I think we ended up loaning Magnus Hedman out. It was awful.
I never complained when we signed Hedman. Never complained whatsoever, because I thought...
No, me neither.
By the way, we're getting a... We're getting an absolute decent goalkeeper here. But he just didn't seem to have... Look, I think he had the ability, but I don't think he had the mentality to play for Celtic, eh? Celtic were the biggest club that he was ever going to play for, and coming from Coventry to Celtic's a massive difference. A massive difference, eh? And it's quite difficult to judge goalkeepers on their time at Celtic, because he was still in the Swedish squad at this point as well. He made a couple of decent saves in this game. Some players just didn't work it, and Hedman was one of them. But again, it's Martin O'Neill and goalkeepers, eh? It's probably one of the things with Martin that he didn't pick a decent goalkeeper. And
did he not, though? I mean, Rab Douglas, to me, was the best goalkeeper in the SPFL other than Klaus. You're not going to sign Klaus at that time, obviously.
Aye, but Klaus was right? The highest
fight. So that was the best other, right? Magnus Hedman, to me, a Sweden international with 50, 60 caps at the time. It's not like he's signing the wrong guys here. But it's funny that they all seem to flap in that Celtic team. The rest of the team seem to play above themselves, but the goalkeeper role, they all seem to play below themselves. And I'm sure it was you who raised this the other week. The best one of the lot was Sanchez Brotto. I mean, he came in, he just seemed to... It was Tony and Laura talking about...
Tony and Laura.
It was Sanchez Brotto came in, ace in his veins. He was... Maybe he didn't care, I don't know. But he just seemed to be not fazed at all by this elevation from Airdrie or Livingston, then Celtic. He just seemed nonplussed by it, which the other two, Hedman and Douglas at times, we both know could do great shot stopping, but both of them seemed to flap when they came to the crunch. Let's be honest, they didn't have the, as you say, the mentality.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I switched to Boost Mobile and got a free Samsung Galaxy A23 5G phone. Want to know the best part?
It was free?
Nope.
The fact that it's on America's largest 5G networks?
Nope. It's the ding.
Oh yeah, love the ding.
Right? It's all about the ding. It's the dingarooski, the dingaroner, the ring-a-ding-ding.
Unleash your power to save with Boost. Get a free Samsung Galaxy A23 5G phone when you switch. Boost Mobile, unleash your power.
And the ding.
Limited time offer, new customers only. Available on select networks. 5G not available everywhere. One device per line, tax excluded. Additional restrictions apply. See your local Boost Mobile store for details.
Mm-hmm. I think that was it. I'm not going to take the credit away from Tony and Laura for actually saying something.
Sorry, I know that was
bad. I didn't say anything sensible at all. But I do wonder if sometimes Brotto is looked through green tinted specs. I think there's a lot of revisionism maybe goes on there. And I mean, he couldn't play in Seville, if I remember correctly, because he had played in the UEFA Cup for Livingston. He played in the UEFA Cup for Livingston. Even saying that sounds utterly bizarre.
That is bizarre.
That's how he couldn't play in Seville.
Oh, I never even caught. Oh, wow, of course. Because they won the CIS Cup.
Aye. I'm old school. I called it the League Cup. I still call it the League Cup, eh? So... Aye, so that was the reason that he was cup tied for the UEFA Cup final. We get to 77 minutes in this game, and the Swedes are gone out by this point. The Italians are just the Swedes really need to win to have any chance. And by this time, the result in the other game's no gone their way anyway, because Turkey are up. But then we get a moment of utter genius from Mr. Larsson.
The King of Kings.
The guy who used to cheer up every tournament for us at this time. Sub Ken Anderson, a big beanpole a guy, intercepts a ball from DiBaggio. And he sticks a ball through. Larsson makes a wee run, and he sticks a ball through. And Larsson's got, like so many times you saw him with Celtic, he's got the acres and acres of grass in front of him, bearing down on a goalkeeper. And the Italians do what the Italians does. They stick their hands up for offside, because that's just what they do.
Of course.
And he was on. I must admit, he was on it. I can tell by your face. It's maybe touch and go, but I think he
benefit
was...
of the doubt, Kev. It wasn't his zone. It wasn't his fault for the corner, and it was definitely onside.
Let's just say, VAR would have chopped it off. VAR now would have chopped it off.
You're just ruining it now.
VAR would have chopped it off. Anyway, he's bearing down on Toldo, who at this point is man of the match with three great saves. And you're going, what's going through Henrik Larsson's mind here? It's ice cold. There's no panic. There's none. Does he know what he's going to do?
Yes.
He decides early.
I think he's one of those folks. It's ice cold you talk about. The other way I would describe it is crystal clear. Clear mindset. He doesn't fluster. He doesn't think about three different options. He goes, this is what I'm going to do. And he does it. And remember, like I say, Francesco Toldo at that point is just about to join Inter Milan. Either that summer or the summer after. I'm not quite sure which one. But I think it was around £20 million. At 30 years old. That's how good a goalie this guy is. Mm-hmm. This is named Mug. And Henrik's not played for a year, really. You know, he's been bedded back in at the Euros. He played 20 minutes coming on for Ayo Berkovic. He's had the worst injury you've ever seen in your life. And for being honest, I've never seen a leg break like that in my life.
Truthfully, I was actually quite glad I was in Lyon and didn't realise how bad it was until we got home. A day and a half later. We never saw any of the pictures of the papers or anything like that because we were travelling back for Lyon. So we didn't realise how bad it was in the stadium at the time.
And I have to give a shout out, Kev. There was someone on Twitter yesterday, the best tweet I've ever seen. Michael Moles is better than Henrik Larsson before his injury.
I saw it.
he gets free popcorn off me every day, mate, if he wants to ever engage on Twitter again.
But it was a reply. Henrik Larsson was better with a broken leg than Michael Moles.
That's too good. But the goal itself, the step over now, some people older than me, well, no, actually, okay, I remember the first time round as well. The World Cup 94. Remember, I've told you this in Screen and Celtic a few times. Uh-huh. The tournament I got football, that was my bug. I went, oh God, right, this is my life now. And it was. And I always remember a dreadlocked Henrik Larsson doing this drag over, very Davor Šuker-esque, in the third place playoff. I think it was against Bulgaria.
Yes, it was.
I always remember that. He's then repeated the trick, but against far better opposition when Sweden were needing it as well. Remember, this wasn't... They don't really know the score in another game, Kev. They need to win. Mm-hmm. And he does a step over to go one way and takes it to the right. And as you just said, rightfully, ice cold. Ice cold. And this is a guy coming back from the brink. And lo and behold, the following 12 months, he produces his best football ever and wins the European Golden Boot. Is it any wonder?
And they also scores a similar goal in a cup final.
Yes!
Six, seven months later in the League Cup final when he rounded Gordon Marshall after running from the halfway line. When you see the goal again, it's fantastic. And I remember going mental when he scored because you just knew that player's back. He's back. He's back. This is going to be brilliant. At that point, we had just appointed Martin O'Neill as manager as well. O'Neill had started on the 1st of June. And you've appointed the best manager in Britain out with Arsene Wenger and Alex Ferguson. For me, I've had folks telling me I was wrong there. No. Martin O'Neill was the third best manager. Was the third best manager in England, in Britain, when we appointed him. And so to see Larsson doing that, again, looking back, you're like, that was the moment you knew this could be good. because we've got a decent manager for once, and our talisman, a once-in-a-generation player, has just came back from the most horrific leg break that you've ever seen. And he does that on the massive stage.
Yes. And there was something about Henrik that was like, he was such an icon anyway. And that's all about the look, I suppose, at first. And it's once you break him down and you start going, it's his character, really. I don't care about his dreadlocks. I don't care if he shaved his head. See, his character, he was hard as nails, mate. And he was very defensive about what Celtic contribute to UK football, what he contributes to UK football, and that those down south judging him on that or doubting him on that are bang out of order and are lazy in their journalism on it, because Henrik was one of those folk who didn't need to do it on a rainy night in Stoke. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He didn't need to do it on a rainy night in Stoke to show he was good. Could he do it on a weeknight in Stoke in the rain? And he didn't need to. He'd do it at Ewood Park. He'd do it at World Cups, Euros. And Euro 2008, remember he kind of did that wee flick about 2 yards out for the goal line? And I know it was a scuff. But see, if you look at his reaction after it, there's a bit of enjoyment that he's done that against England. I'm telling you right now, he's loving it.
Henrik Larsson left Celtic Football Club to wind down his career and ended up winning a Champions League. That's all you need to know. He says, I'm going to wind down my career and go back to Sweden. He ends up winning a bloody Champions League. Then he ends up playing for Man United. That's some retirement tour. Going to the MLS or the Australian League or Japan. He goes to Barcelona to retire. Who does that?
That's such a good way of putting it.
Only a generational player does that.
Yeah.
I mentioned Martin O'Neill there. And Martin O'Neill was working for ITV in this tournament.
And they were cooking gas.
He was working for ITV in the tournament. And obviously Martin O'Neill's first signing was Chris Sutton. Who was the player that he spotted in this tournament while sitting doing it for ITV?
Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out? Big Hughes.
Hughes.
Right? And basically that's what O'Neill knew nothing about Yusuf Harden until he saw him in the first game against
Belgium. Sweden, of course.
Then and right away he says, "I quite like the look of that big fella," and found out all about him. So
that's right. So then it intertwines all over again. That's a clever thread, Kev. And I don't like when you poke up your backside, but a very good thread, mate. That is clever.
Joined
those dots.
Mhm. Aye, that's because Martin O'Neill basically he started on the 1st of June, and he had already signed up to do the Euros. And I remember there was a big, massive hoo-ha about it. Oh, you need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. And Tommy Burns and Matt Reaper took the first couple of days of pre-season training until O'Neill returned for the Euros.
Wow. Oh, do you know what's also very interesting? Just a wee side note. There's someone else who's just took his first ever coaching job who's about to do the same thing. Scott Brown is about to be at ITV's, whatever Scotland game it is, they cover. I don't know if it's the game on Friday or the following one. But Scott Brown is on their list of pundits, which seems quite alien to me for Scott Brown to be doing that. Whereas Martin O'Neill, you knew, was born to do stuff like that. As much as he was a great manager, loved taking Gary Lineker, et cetera, to school. You know, he was witty, he was sharp. Scott Brown, though, must be, as you rightfully point out, when you thought of O'Neill, then you thought, well, Matt Reaper shouldn't be taking coaching. We need O'Neill in the job. We need him there. And I wonder what the Aberdeen fans make of Scott Brown's commitment to doing the ITV thing. And I wonder what decision Scott Brown made first. Jinky chose to join Aberdeen and then went, by the way, I've agreed to do ITV.
Well, I don't know.
Or I've been given the green light to do that whilst accepting he's now a coach. because he's spoke quite publicly. Sorry, just quickly. He spoke quite publicly about he's been involved in the recruitment side of things as well.
Is it?
He says it's really fascinating. He goes, I'm learning a lot now, player recruitment, etc. So
I'm Scott Bounds deep to me now. He plays for Aberdeen.
Oh, I don't say that. You don't mean that.
I didn't. We're in the age of Ange now, so that's where we're gone. We're in the age of Ange, and so that's where all your focus is going to be. But good luck to Scott Bounds and his media career. But that's Martin O'Neill. He was at the Euros, and I remember the big. I mean, we had no background staff. So Tommy Burns came from the youth team, and Matt Reaper was an experienced player who had just retired, ended up starting taking pre-season training.
I did not know that because
Steve Walford and
Robertson
didn't they come until the season started.
That's right. So, I didn't know Mark Reaper was that heavily involved, though. I didn't know that until today.
They wanted Reaper to stay. Obviously, Burns went back to the youth academy, Lennox Town. He went back to that. But they wanted Reaper to stay as part of the team, but he did go back to Denmark.
Wow.
So there you go.
Good knowledge again.
Yes.
You've been well tonight, Kev. You're on fire. I would not have known that.
Well, the project I've been working on for about 2 years is round about this period, so I'm quite up. My knowledge of this period is quite unbelievable. So we may as well talk about Del Piero's goal to win it for Italy. What a peachy a goal this is, eh? The ball breaks to him and he rifles it in for the edge of the box. It's a classic Del Piero goal.
Do you know what's so funny? Twice Del Piero scored against a team I didn't want him to score for, like, or in a match I didn't want him to score for, and both times he's a bit of a reserve.
I know.
The Juventus 4-3 Celtic game, I know, goes down in history, but let's be honest, they made a lot of changes that game. They did. That 4-3 game, but they did, eh? Del Piero at that point was out of favour for whatever reason. He was not. See, in the 90s, I remember he used to destroy Man United and that. He used to torment them when he was 20, 21. And then he seemed to be one of those folk who got to 28, 29 and folk fell out of love with him. And then by the time he was 36, 37, he was getting told he was the best player in the world again. It's a very strange, like, cycle that I think you see that with a lot of footballers, if I'm honest, that they go through, they get to their peak and everyone wants to grind them down or break them down. And then they get older and everyone gets nostalgic about them again. But the goal itself,
Peach.
Wow, effortless, mate.
We say this quite a lot in this. We saw that we say this about Andy Tom's goal at Ibrox a couple of weeks ago. This is what nets are for. This is why nets are made to catch. They're not made to catch David Marshall, like he's a drunk lobster tangled up in a net. Eh? They're actually made to stop balls like this.
So true.
Killing somebody, like giving somebody a serious facial injury in the crowd. Larsson and Del Piero in the same score sheet. I mean, you can't get much better than that. And when you go back to that 4-3 game, for me, Lubo was the best player on the night, best player on the park that night. But he was closely followed by Trezeguet, because they brought on Trezeguet at half time. And he was one. He had a fantastic 45 minutes.
He was a joke.
Mm-hmm.
He was a joke. And again, Celtic connections always. Who was it that watched David Trezeguet's like first team training session at Monaco? John Collin, because he's playing with him. John Collins played with Henri, Trezeguet, Mad. There's more Celtic connotations. You know what I mean? Which is cool. I think as well with the kits, you were saying the Sweden kit, one of the nicest Sweden kits, which I've always liked Sweden kits anyway. And maybe there is a bit of bias because of Kenrick. Maybe there is. Who cares?
I've actually got that.
The Italy one, though, superb. The first top I ever seen that had these sleeves that came down to the elbows as opposed to, you know, like there. It was like the first sort of neat fit. And the reason behind it was, I read about this, so Kappa made the strips. Ended up Roma wore it, Tottenham wore it, Blackburn wore it. And the reason for it was because it was getting used in rugby at the time, Kev. Uh-huh. And it was the highlight of someone's pulling your jersey because it was made of this stretchy material. So the point was, it's not going to let, funnily enough, what you would probably class as Italian defenders get away with their usual tricks, because it was going to highlight more to the referee if a shirt's being tugged or pulled at. There you go.
I must admit, wasn't it one of my favourite Italian tops, that
loved
one? I've got the Sweden top up the stairs.
Have you?
I have got that Sweden top. It's a bit tight on me. That's why I haven't got it on the night, because I wouldn't be able to move. And next time I see you, Russell, I'll actually gift it to you, because it'll fit you. It will fit you.
Oh, mate. No,
it will fit you.
Oh, thanks, man. I would love that, by the way. I would.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
So that's a spoke about the Euros, Henrik Larsson. It's always great to talk about Henrik Larsson, Del Piero, fantastic football players. Let's talk about what everybody's on here, but the legends.
Right.
Legends.
I'm
going to
go first.
You right, go first. I'll
tell you why. Because the guy you've chose is actually, I much prefer him. He's my absolute favourite. Let's talk about him more, right? But right. I went for Johnny Cash. The American album is number 3. And very briefly, I listened to the album twice. Again, like that's my usual homework. Dolby Atmos, remember I told you about the setting?
Aye.
And forms the music. I was a bit bored, I'll be honest with you, once I got into it. What I will say is, his version of One, the opposite U2 famous song, mm-hmm. is better than U2's.
Definitely.
And I don't know why, because Bono is clearly singing better notes, or betterly singing than Johnny Cash. But Johnny Cash's directness hits home. It's like, I don't know how he's doing that, but it's like it connects very, very well. It's like, it's really simple what he's doing, but also so real that you can't help but like get the wee hairs on your arm, you know, sort of stand up when he's talking about one love, one life and stuff. And I know that he did the album when his health was...
It's the emotion that he's got in the lyrics of the song. And he's transferring his emotion into those lyrics. For me, anyway, picturing, as you say, he's getting to the end of his life. He's like...
He's reflective.
He's singing it
from a completely different perspective than what Bono was in the 80s when it got released.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
He's singing it with a different meaning. Mm-hmm. And it's took the song on to this different stage. I emphasise to anyone, if you want to listen to a really nice, you know, you have one of those moments in life, we all have them, emotional moments. One by Johnny Cash is, for me, the perfect B-side to the Heart song, which I know it's got the infamy, but I think One is up there beside it as the B-side.
Johnny Cash is a rock and roll legend.
Yes.
Bottom line, there's no argument, there's no ifs, buts and maybes. Johnny Cash is a rock and roll legend.
So by delivery, Kev, see sometimes everyone looks, see if every rock and roll band was signed by Charlotte Church, the songs wouldn't mean as much. You can be on Adele. You know, you can't be, sometimes it's not about your singing ability. Sometimes it's about connecting with your audience and connecting with the listener. And for whatever reason, right or wrong, he completely does that.
Definitely. I mean, when you're talking about connecting with your audience, Richard Ashcroft, in the June of this year, released his first solo album, which was 3 years after The Verve went stratospheric with Urban Hymns. And did this album connect with the fans of The Verve, do you think?
Don't care. It connected. I think folk tried too hard with that stuff. Like The Verve, I think The Verve's band vibe was, they're a lot cleverer than Richard. Like, we're like really clever musicians. Like, just write a good tune, mate, and shut up. You know what I mean? Go on with it. And Ashcroft, to me, His solo stuff, oh God, I could enthuse about Richard Ashcroft till the cows come home. Like, me and my mate, Matt Laird, we never called him Ashcroft, we called him God. That's the honest truth about Gracie God today. That was, we went to see him between us, I mean, about 15 times together, you know, and he's just, for me, he's there. And it's great writing sentimental lyrics, like in that album, there's plenty of Brave New World, etc. I Get My Beat, which is my favourite. I love that song. Mm-hmm. But you know what's mad with Ashcroft is? He actually meant it when he was singing it. I think he's 27 years married to his wife now. He wasn't taking the piss. Like, sorry about the language. I just feel like he wasn't taking the mic. He was just, he was actually being true and honest. He wasn't just like giving you sound bites of, oh, that soul music, man. And he's actually telling the truth. He's just a like loving guy, you know?
His wife actually played on this album. His wife, oh, Kate Radley, wow, played on this album. Do you know the whole story of who his wife is?
No.
His wife is a lady called Kate Radley, who was in a band called Spiritualized that I loved.
Yeah.
And the Verve toured with Spiritualized and around America before they released A Northern Soul. And Kate Radley used to be, hear me and Paul talk about Jason Pierce. Basically, Kate Radley was Jason Pierce's girlfriend, but she ended up leaving Jason Pierce for Richard Ashcroft. So, there you go.
Love it. What do you mean the album? Talk to me about the album. You must have listened to it again.
I love the album. The album's a far, far stronger than what I remember it being. It's far, far stronger what I remember it being. I mean, you've got three songs on it: A Song for Lovers, which is a superb song, New York, and Come On People, We're Making It Now, which were all written for Urban Hymns, but never made it on the album.
Okay. Right. I didn't know that.
There is versions on YouTube of the Verve doing Come On People. There is a verse, and I also think there's a version of the Verve doing Song for Lovers as well.
So did you know his new album, or his latest album, it was a couple of years ago, is a song on it called Birds Fly?
Uh-huh.
And that apparently is an old Verve song as well. And I can kind of hear it when you even his obviously a completely different road he went down with it, but I'm sure that was meant to be a Verve song as well. And he brought that back. But Come On People, Are Making It Now. Wait till you hear this. Do you know that's Liam Gallagher's number one dream to cover?
Is it? I can picture Liam doing that.
Imagine that. So right before lockdown, Liam Gallagher was getting drunk going on Twitter. I've done it plenty of times myself, to be fair. Apologies to anyone I've offended. But I mean, he was going on like 2 in the morning, just going, come on, people are making it now. And then it was like, someone's like, why do you keep saying that? And he goes, because I'm going to cover it and I'm going to bring the beast out with that. You know, it was sort of once up to that effect. I think that could be right good. It could be
right good. I can actually picture him doing a great version of that. I've always wanted Liam to do a version of River Deep. Come back, on you go. I forgot the song that I was going to mention.
Just quickly, it's always about being relevant. So we always tie in Celtic players with Sweden or Sweden players with Celtic or whatever. But it's important to do it in music as well. Now, New York, you brought up by Richard Ashcroft. Mm-hmm. What does he say at the end? Are you tuning in? It's a state of mind.
There you go.
That's what he says at the very end of the song. Tuning in. It's a state of mind. And that song, by the way, is Gallas.
It's a great, you can actually hear the Verve-ness in it, and the song Money to Burn as well sounds like Spiritualized, and I always kind of have a wee chuckle when I hear that, because I know that Kate Radley used to be in Spiritualized.
And that's what I get my beat on it as well, doesn't it?
Yes.
I get my beat on you when we see things through. That song to me is, that's just him at his best, mate. Mm-hmm. I just think it's, and do you know what you forget? You're talking about this as like this post-Verve career. Richard Ashcroft at that point was 28, turning 29 years old. Think how young that is. And like, that's the Verve done with at that point. Well, like, what's that back catalogue already?
Well, with Ashcroft, right? I'm not going to disagree with Ashcroft. The song that I wanted Liam to ever cover is Proud Mary. I think you'd be great at doing Proud Mary. I think it'd be fantastic.
I get you.
Anyway, back. So this is between Urban Hymns and this is two and a bit year between Urban Hymns and this. So obviously Ashcroft's got these songs sitting there, right?
Yes.
So 3 years ago there was a reissue of Urban Hymns, and I don't know if you ever listened to all the interviews that went on with Urban Hymns. So right. Richard Ashcroft done one on I think it was Virgin Radio, and Nick McCabe and Pete Simon Tong done another one, I think, on the BBC. And the two stories of the album are two completely different versions. Richard Ashcroft will sit there all day and claim that Urban Hymns was his first solo album. He says, that should have been my first solo album.
Right.
And he was claiming that. The other two, Tong and McCabe, were saying the album was didn't sound anything like until they went in and polished a lot of it up and made it the album that it was. So 3 years ago, they're releasing box sets. And in this interview with McCabe and Simon Tong, they start mentioning these songs that Richard Ashcroft won't allow them to release as extras on the box set.
Wow.
Right? So he says, aye, there's whole loads of stuff there that we recorded when Nick came back in. And 3 days before the Urban Hymns box set is released, all six of them appear on YouTube, right, with a guy called Star Sailor. So it's obviously Nick McCabe's fired them up, right? And the story going about is these songs, the six songs are, if you search Star Sailor or you search Jalfrezi by The Verve, so all the songs have got strange names. There's one of them called Sweet and Sour. There's one of them called Jalfrezi. There's one of them called King Riff. There's one of them called Tina Turner. So they must have just had, obviously, they just had pet names for the songs. And Pete Salisbury, the drummer, who always works with Ashcroft, has actually admitted that Ashcroft's tried to record some of these songs for his solo stuff and can't get it right because these are Verve songs. There's also a song called Oh Sister, which is one of the best Verve songs ever. It's never been released. So if you go on YouTube and search The Verve Jalfrezi or The Verve Sweet and Sour, you'll find these six tracks. So it makes me wonder why Ashcroft, these have never appeared on any Ashcroft solo album, and they never appeared on the next Verve album.
Yeah, what's the benefit?
I don't know.
Because The Verve came back 2008, as you rightly point out, and if they were going to see the light of day, if it's not been on one of what by that point three Richard Ashcroft solo albums, then it would come on the. And the Verve comeback album.
It would come on the Verve. Seemingly the only one that was close to making the comeback album was Oh Sister. That was close to being on fourth, but somehow it was pulled at the last minute. And
I always got the vibe that when they came back, I felt did it a bit for the money. I got the vibe that they weren't really committed to each other like they were before. I still think there was scars there that were just not going to heal. They were a band that don't really get on anymore and don't appreciate what's happened in the last decade. I think they looked at Ashcroft coming out in bare feet and thought it was pathetic. You know what I mean? Because he did loads of gigs in bare feet at one point. And I can imagine McCabe and that being like, music is power. They found it corny. I generally love it. But I can imagine them going, you used to be cool. Like, you're not anymore. And I think those tensions, I always got the vibe were there. I never ever felt they were back together for good, even when they came back.
No. I think
you always had that vibe, eh?
When you hear then, when the re-release Urban Hymns and you hear these two interviews about the same album and they're wildly different, it just shows you how the both parties in the band have got different perceptions. For me, these songs, I think they've, well, Salisbury says that he's tried to record them a couple of times, but I think these songs are not on anything apart from this, the YouTube leak, because they weren't solely written by Richard Ashcroft, and he would have to have paid the other band members a royalty to them.
Which is quite ironic, considering what Bittersweet Symphony did to Richard Ashcroft.
And when he's got to fourth, I'll need to check fourth, I think a lot of them are written by Ashcroft only. And a lot of these, when you actually hear them, a lot of these songs are all jams which have been formed into songs. I think it was, over my head, I can only see Ashcroft being...
Which is all very funny as well, Kev, because you talk about songs being written by Richard Ashcroft. Sorry, I'm just going to quickly say this. I always remember a famous quote recently by none other than Noel Gallagher. I don't need an army of songwriters like our kid, Richard Ashcroft, you name them. And Ashcroft put his first tweet out for 8 years saying, "Hey, Noel, what's that all about army songwriters? Go look at my song crediting." You know what I mean? Before you start that nonsense. And you've got his albums as him. What's the irony is, though, Kev, and this is now me bringing things to modern affairs, Noel Gallagher just released a song the other day called "Flying on the Ground." Mm-hmm. It could be written by Richard Ashcroft, right?
That could be.
It's so Richard Ashcroft, it's unreal. But it's wonderful. I encourage people to listen to it. But I just thought there's a bit of irony there. You know, you used to accuse him of an army of songwriters, now you're singing songs that are in his style.
Definitely. It's a very good song, that song by Noel Gallagher.
It is, right?
But I think for tonight, the lost treasure is... Seek out those six verse songs.
Yes. Which,
it makes me wonder why Ashcroft was so determined that these would never see the light of day.
Why?
Why? When they're absolutely fantastic songs.
And why, when they got back together, was it still not like a unification just to bring them out then?
That's a puzzle, because you've got from 98 to 2000, these songs are there and they never appear until 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's wild. That's wild. I could talk about Richard Ashcroft all night, Kev, to be honest with you. I mean,
I know. So could I, but I think everybody wants to go and watch France v Germany.
Yes.
And producer Paul has got somewhere else to be as well. I'm surprised that he's no came in and told us that to shut up and move on. So everybody, thanks a lot. Hope you're all enjoying the Euros. I'm back tomorrow afternoon for the bulletin. Please subscribe.
No,
tell your friends. Please subscribe. Tell your pals. Do whatever you want. Calm down and see.
Calm down
and just be nice to folk. Okay, folk are no nice to you. Oh, be nice back to them. We're here for a short time, not a long time. Just calm down, everybody.
Love that.
Calm down, everybody, and see you later.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat? Just stop. This isn't 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today, because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203.
Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's EASY to 203203.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.